direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes.
You just called me stupid before we started the show. And it's recording. Welcome to the show, everybody. I am wearing a very plaid shirt today. I just thought
it is very plaid. It's lovely, though. I like the colors.
It's like an angry plaid.
Not quite.
It's also not very, it's also very wrinkled, which I didn't realize until I put it on.
So is my t-shirt. It's okay.
Julie, by the way, wearing an awesome, it looks like a Japanese inspired.
It's French. It's a French style. I can't think of the name of it right now, but
so we'll
it's
say,
very specific.
So we'll say Japanese style.
Okay. Is it because I'm Asian?
You want everything to be Asian?
No, I'm saying, is it because I'm Asian that you automatically assume that it was a
Japanese
style
I said it was
shirt?
French.
What?
You're Chinese, though.
I am Chinese.
See how I got out of that?
Yeah.
I have a Trivial Pursuit question for you.
Okay.
I'm kidding. I actually busted this out because we may do a little game later. Maybe.
No, I'm not good at random facts of the world and things.
Oh, yeah? Then answer me this.
Oh, God. I'm kidding. It's like so much pressure. The listeners are going to think I'm stupid.
Julie, you've been on
things.
8 episodes in a row. Nobody thinks you're stupid.
8 episodes in a row?
I feel like it. You were on the... First of all, let's talk about the feedback from our ghost episode.
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly positive. Everybody loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give all the kudos to Matt the Rat. I have an awful story about myself I have to tell you.
Okay. I'm excited.
Do you ever just feel like deep shame when you think about something that you've said to somebody and then you just like replay it over and over in your mind?
Yeah.
Why does he never... All day he's home. With me, the mm-hmm. dog, doesn't go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Soon as I start recording, in and out, in and out.
Yep. He knows.
He's the star. Okay, today is going to be very kind of a, while we don't have a, we have a topic, but it leaves itself open to a lot of rambling, possible rambling. So I'm going to try to keep it as focused as possible, but first things first, before I tell this bad story about myself. What I was saying, shout out to Matt the Rat, because I didn't want to do the ghost stories one and he brought it up and ended up being really good. So, there you go, Matt. That's as close as to a thumbs up as you're going to get from me. Cause it got some positive feedback.
It was,
and you had some good, you both had some really good stories and you looked terrified the whole time.
I know. I wish it was one of those like filmed podcasts where you can see my face. Cause
it was pretty priceless.
I would have liked to see my own face because
you just looked. You was like you were just staring, and your mouth was slightly open. You were just blinking like the whole time he was talking. Like it was good. It was good. Well, first up, we have an announcement of sorts. Julie and I have been talking behind the scenes, which happens sometimes, and Julie has. Graciously agreed to help me out a little bit more on the podcast. So I won't say she's a permanent, like an official co-host, but what Julie has agreed to do is when in her spare time, which could change because, can we tell everybody about your recent, okay. I won't say anything. Things have changed in Julie's personal life. We'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds way more.
Yeah. That sounds worse than what the actual situation is.
She is accepted for her, transgender operation, so all the paperwork's there.
Very excited.
So we will now be doing this podcast with Jules, our new friend Jules. He's very much into the French New Wave and French-inspired Star Wars t-shirts. So look for that was nice. Look for Jules to be joining us very very soon. But things have kind of changed as far as Julie's schedule. That sounds better.
Yeah.
Julie's schedule is going to be changing. So
we could mellow out soon, but you know,
we'd agreed a couple weeks ago that Julie would come in, and there are days of the week where I can't, I just through sheer laziness or just bad luck. I have a guest, drop out or not be able to make it. So Julie has graciously agreed to be my fill in as loath as I am to use a term from American League Baseball. She is going to be my designated hitter, is what we'll call her. So she has no idea what that
is. Sure. Sports and things.
Okay.
Scores.
There are two leagues.
You're getting explain it.
In baseball.
Uh-huh.
One is awesome, and the other one uses the designated hitter.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. All
right.
Designated hitter is basically a cheat, because you get to pick one guy who does nothing but hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the American League, you can have... So, your pitcher doesn't have to hit the ball. He doesn't have to take a turn to bat. You get this awesome guy, you know, that can just belt it out, and he goes up and hits in the pitcher's place.
Gotcha.
In the National League, you got it.
You need a sports episode.
I do. I've been trying to get my brother on just to talk. We're going to do an episode where we talk about, and my friend, a couple of friends on here that we want to talk about the history. Our history with the Dodgers, like what the Dodgers have meant to us over the years. So,
I see.
And it would be really awesome. And I think even non-sports people would like it. But I can't get everybody in at the same time. And so it's been a little bit of a struggle, but it'll happen. I'm going to make it happen in 2014, Julie.
Yeah, that's one topic I really cannot help with.
We are going to take you to a baseball game this year, and we are going to podcast live from Dodger Stadium.
Well, I like baseball. I've been to baseball games. I don't, you know, go out of my way to watch
you
it
just
or
like
anything.
Sports.
I am not a sports person. I was in dance and theater. So.
See,
I'm one of those people. Take me to a musical.
I'm
there
one of the people. I could probably go to a musical with you, but I'm one of those people that I have the sports gene. As far as being able to enjoy it, I love sports, mm-hmm. love watching. Could not play to save my life.
Yeah, me neither.
And then my brothers, they were very athletic. They, you know. And then, but I got both. I got the geek gene, and I got the I love sports gene. So my poor wife is just, you know, if she bought me, you know, if she buys me, you know, a, you know, some autographed baseball card, I'll love it. And if she buys me, you know, Battlestar Galactica on Blu-ray, which she already did,
mm-hmm.
that's the kind of wife I have.
So
the complete
lucky.
Series. I know.
So lucky.
I know. So that's it. Julie is going to be our what do we call you? We'll call you the pinch hitter, because that's the National League term.
Okay.
The pinch hitter. The pinch hitter is here, everybody.
I'll take it.
Kang the Conqueror. So I'm going to tell you a real quick story, Julie, and I want your judgment. Because ooh. I really want to break this down.
I love judging people.
So
it's like my favorite thing.
Okay, well, here's what... this is kind of what happened. So... I was doing Matt the Rat's podcast on Tuesday, and mm-hmm. we do it from Ender City Comics, which you've been there, yes?
Yeah, I went there once.
That's right, we've been there. So we're doing the podcast, and this kid walks in, and, you know, nice-looking, sharp-dressed kid, you know, and he's, you know, maybe early 20s, and he looked very, in my head, I thought he looked like something out of Starship Troopers, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, gray slacks, like gray, he had like the gray shirt, like black tie.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it looked very, very, you know, very, very stark, very, very stark colors, mm-hmm. but very, you know, well put together. So he leaves, and I say, I just stopped the podcast and, you know, I just blurt out. I go, hey, did anyone else think that kid looked like Hitler Youth?
Oh, God.
Right? So, you know, just dumb joke, right?
Right.
It's like, you know, who dresses like a Hitler? But it turns out he had just asked, hey, when can I listen to this podcast?
Oh, my God.
Right? So, like, now they go, oh, my God. Everybody's cracking up and stuff. And I'm just like, you know, I'm not, like, apologizing right away, because I'm trying to explain, like, what I meant. And
Yeah.
And then later on, I felt really bad because what made me feel bad was, you know, if nobody had said anything, I probably wouldn't have apologized, because it just came out and I just threw it out there like a dumb joke. But then I thought to myself, like, why would I say something like that? That's such a, you know, it's like, you know, as a person who like tries to defend nerds and geeks,
mm-hmm.
you know, I wasn't slamming him for being in a comic book store or anything, but I was slamming the way he dressed, which is something a bully would do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. I really felt bad about that. I was like, why would I just, that? Why is that the go-to?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why couldn't I have said, because in my mind, I thought, wow,
thought Starship Troopers,
but in
but
my
you
mind,
didn't say that.
In my mind, I also thought that's something I could never wear. Like, this kid is like super skinny. Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, I could never pull that look off. So in a way, it was kind of like, I don't know if I was jealous or I don't know if I was...
You're trying to make yourself feel better by saying something bad.
Yeah, like that's a horrible thing to do. And so I felt really bad, and I felt bad because that podcast really has, it has the name of the store. Like, it's there mm-hmm. to represent. And so, you know, the owner was there and she just laughed. She's like, you were just kidding. Like, it's no yeah. big deal. You know what I mean? But I really, 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 really felt awful. So,
That's funny.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why. Why is that the go-to? Why do you think that? Let's talk about me for a minute.
I don't know. Maybe it's a defense mechanism for you to, like, play it off with humor. You know, like you said, like, you see someone and you're like, oh, I could never wear something like that.
Yeah,
you
know? I don't know. I felt bad afterwards because I was like, why go to that? Why go to the, you know?
You can't say nice things 100% of the time. And, like, honestly, it's kind of funny. It is kind of funny. So that's where you go. You're a funny guy. And so you're just always going to say what you're thinking. I understand, like, where your concern comes from, but that's always whenever people, like, overthink things.
Well, yeah, that's what because I told Matt, I was like, yeah, let's just edit that. And he's like, dude, I don't edit the show. And I was like, okay, well, that's admirable. But, you know, I hate to screw, like, I hate to just feel, I felt bad because, okay, A, I'm making a joke at someone else's expense. And someone who just left, like, I waited until they were gone.
You couldn't even, like, say it to them.
I couldn't even,
you know?
I didn't even have the, I wasn't even like, cool. Yeah, I wasn't even like, hey, man, nice, what are you, you know, I'm not even doing that. I couldn't even think of a one-liner. I wait till he leaves.
Like, are you missing your swastika or something like that?
That's awful.
No. That is awful.
You can't say swastika.
Why?
Well, you just really brought this show to a grinding halt. My daughter is, on an unrelated note, my daughter is reading, I think it's called The Boy in the Wooden Box. It's a story about the youngest survivor of Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter, you know, she's had all these questions and she's come up and she's had questions about the Holocaust and, you know, all these really difficult questions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to see, you know, you got to remember that you're dealing with someone who's hearing these things for the first time. So you're very careful about how mm-hmm. And, you know, she wanted to know, are we still friends with the Germans? Is, you know, what's going Aww. On? Like, why are we friends with them? And,
yeah.
like, you know, you explain, you know, this was the government at the time, and that government was, you know, deposed and, you know, all this. And mm-hmm. so, you know, you're trying to explain, like, you know, she was very, very deeply affected by the book. So, you know, this was right at the end of right before Christmas break. So Christmas, we go over to my niece's house and, she's got two young kids, a little bit younger than my daughter, and they're all in the room playing restaurant and they're coming out and taking our orders and doing all this stuff. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, my daughter comes out wearing like this army helmet that obviously belongs to my little nephew. And she runs out and she's doing guns, which she never does. She's doing like gun fingers and she's going, World War II, World War II, the Jews win.
Oh my God. What did you do?
I just started laughing. Like, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
She wanted him to win. She was like, the Jews win. The Jews win.
Well, yeah. I mean, they do win at like
yeah,
life.
Yeah, yeah.
So
right.
I guess she's right. That's hilarious.
Yeah, she just came out and she was like, yes. But it was really funny because I was just like, wow, she really took that lesson and gave her to heart. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Like,
So let's moving on from my, but you know, it was one of those things.
Don't feel too bad about it.
No, but I replayed it over and over in my head.
I do that too. I'm the worst when it comes to replaying things and like regretting things that you say.
That
yeah.
Awful.
Stewing in your misery.
That's why I like you, Julie. We're two peas in a pod. So Julie had an idea for a topic this week and, we originally going to talk about one of our favorite TV shows, which
we
can still talk about it. Julie had an idea. She said she was, well, I'll let you explain what you were thinking, Julie.
At first it started out cause I wanted to talk about Battlestar Galactica cause I hadn't watched it before. It's a very recent TV show for me. I know like it came out a while ago, but I never brought myself to actually fully like sit down and enjoy it. So I did that and I was thinking, oh, we can talk about that. But I'm like, I can see myself stemming off from that topic in so many different ways. And I'm like, you know, let's maybe talk about why, you know, you and I enjoy science fiction so much.
That's a great topic.
Yeah. Like why it hits us.
And the funny thing about Battlestar Galactica is you can go off in any direction, but a lot of things are things that people shouldn't talk about because you can get into politics.
Mm-hmm.
You get into religion.
But that's why I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's such
you know?
A, it's such a, it just to, before we, and what's funny about that show is that really was the precursor to kind of the modern, I think Firefly maybe predates it, but Firefly didn't have as big of an impact because it was one season.
Yeah.
But I think Battlestar Galactica was really at the cusp of like the modern kind of geek age. I think that had a lot to do with a lot of people going. Because that was on the same time as like Lost was on and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Battlestar is more hardcore sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
But the best hardcore sci-fi is always rooted in things that we can relate to, just like Star Trek, all the best stories.
It's all about philosophy.
It's all about philosophy, and it's all about, you know, Battlestar Galactica deal is. It's basically America in the post 9/11 world, is basically what Battlestar is.
Yeah.
It's really, really what it is. And if you haven't watched it, start watching. It's a great show.
It's so good.
It's so good. My wife, I started, when we talked about possibly doing it, I said, you know, I need to sit down and just brush up because I watched it the whole first run. And I sat down and I started watching the pilot. And it was an afternoon, and I watched the whole pilot. It was like, you know, what, 2.5 hours?
Something like that. It's like two episodes combined.
Yeah, and so my wife just sat down and started watching the whole thing. She's like, oh, now, she's like, now I have to see what happens.
Yeah.
So she has been, she's, I think, in season two now. And nice. She maybe saw an episode here or there when I was watching it, but
yeah.
I was so far into it by the time she kind of got on. That she just was like, there's no way, you know, I have too much other stuff going on. So she never watched it. So it's really awesome to kind of be able to talk about it with her.
Yeah.
And I will say, I've told this story before, that was how I got into Doctor Who. Because
yeah, I do remember that.
When they used to run it on Sci-Fi, I used to let it run long because some of those episodes would run like 2 hours, 1 minute, one of those weird things.
Yeah.
So I'd leave the DVR on a little extra, and I'd always catch the first couple of minutes of Doctor Who, and it was the Eccleston Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I always thought, man, this show really looks different than when I was a kid. And so when it popped up on Netflix, I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. And this was just before it like exploded into, you know, the Doctor Who Doctor Who phenomenon. So
yeah, that it is.
Not that I'm trying to sound like a hipster, but it was just the timing of it. I just happened to jump on board when it was still relatively kind of, you know, it hadn't become like the you know, there weren't billboards for it yet.
Yeah, I hadn't jumped on it until until Tenant's Regeneration. Because I talked about this in the Doctor Who episode too, where it was around the time that Tenant was going to regenerate. It was going to be the 11th Doctor coming in, so they were doing a lot of marathons.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot of marathons, and then before that, I was catching a few episodes here and there on BBC America, because I love Top Gear and Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah.
And sometimes it'll sandwich those shows, sometimes I'll see parts of it, but when I first saw them, I was like, this is insanity. It's so weird. I think one of the first episodes I ever saw was the Agatha Christie one.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awful.
Yeah, it's like, not a good episode.
It's one of the worst episodes ever. So obviously, I wasn't drawn in at all. But then the ones that drew me in were Forest of the Dead and Silence in the Library.
Yeah.
Where I jumped in toward the end of one of the episodes and I was like, oh my God, I wish I had seen the rest of it. What is happening? This is so interesting. And I finally got sucked into it when like the marathons came back around, like all the way from the Ninth Doctor. And so I started watching those. Or I started watching it when it was like Tenet and stuff. Because I still didn't completely understand what was going on. But
yeah. You know, it's so funny because you just... it's good television, and especially good science fiction, will draw you in that way. And it'll make you want to keep watching or keep reading or keep... And speaking of which, I'm trying to read more this year. So... I don't know. I haven't set a goal for myself, but I'm trying to do maybe a book or two a month just to get throughout the year. I just want to keep having something constantly going. So I started reading Ready Player One and I'm halfway through it and I'm really digging it. It's really, really cool. Julie recommended it a couple of episodes back. I don't have it written down here, but I know it was like, I think it was your first solo episode, but you recommended it. And I'm loving it. There's, gamers especially will love it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really geared toward gamers. I would recommend it to more people, especially just for the 80s nostalgia, but you have to kind of have to, you don't have to be a hardcore gamer, but you have to know enough because the gaming aspect of it takes up, you know, a bulk of the book.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of great references to 80s movies and 80s music. And it's just it's not the best written book.
It's a fun book.
But it is super fun.
It's fun. It's addicting.
I love it. I can't wait to get back into the book and find out where. I just got to the part where, spoiler alert. All right. I just got to the part where Artemis found the Jade Key.
Okay.
So he just got the news that Artemis found the Jade Key.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like trying to snap out of being
being depressed and stuff.
So I'm about halfway through.
Okay, cool.
But I was just thinking, I was thinking about this as far as the net neutrality argument that has just recently popped up again.
Mm-hmm.
But I was totally thinking about that, how Oasis is like this free space.
Yep.
And how this evil corporation is trying to take it and just use it for their own. And it totally mirrors everything that's going on.
It does. That's why I love science fiction, because there are things that start happening and you're like, oh my God, I've read about it, I've seen it, and it's actually happening in real life, or it could happen. It could get to that point. And hopefully there are enough sci-fi geeks out there to like, you know, put the word out there and be like, we've seen this happen before.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Battlestar Galactica, when we start making robots and things like that, when they become self-aware, we know to treat them equally, you know, not to write them off or anything.
Yeah. Or, you know, Skynet. Skynet's going live.
Like, I keep saying that. I mean, just recently they said there were some engineers of Google that said they don't understand the algorithms that are happening with the Google search, how it's recommending things to people that they don't understand how it's doing it, because they didn't program it to do that. It's becoming kind of self-aware in that way, where it's learning how to adapt to what we want when we Google search things. And so, yeah, even the engineers are like baffled. Apparently they're like, we don't know how it's doing it, but it's doing it. And yeah, I'm like, oh God, it's happening, guys. It's happening.
That doesn't concern anyone. But I remember when I was a kid, there was a story I read about. I never read the story, but I read about a story where this is like in the 70s sometime. This story must have been 60s or 70s. Scientists are trying to prove the existence of God or disprove the existence of God.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically network all of the world's computers into a supercomputer.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the story is them asking, is there a God? And the computer responds, there is now.
Oh,
I know. And I never knew the name of the story. But that ending, when I was a little kid, always chilled. I must have read that when I was like maybe 10 or 11. And it was like, I used to buy books, anything that had like robots in it. I remember buying this book. It would be like the equivalent now of like a DK book, you know, and it was just about robots. And it was all these robots that had been in pop culture from, you know, Rossum's Universal Robots, which is like the first, it was like a Czech play that was like the first, it was the first time the word robot was used, and they were basically like mechanical slaves to make, it's always the story. It's always they're here to make our life better. And then they turn you know, just like Battlestar Galactica, but it had everything up to like, you know, K-9 was in there and the Daleks were in there. And, you know, and I probably had this book when I was, you know, probably 11 or 12, and C-3PO and R2-D2 and every robot from every like movies I had never seen, like foreign science fiction, they were all in this book. And
that's
I remember I was always drawn to things like that. So I don't remember where I read about that story with all the computers.
I wish you did, because that sounds really interesting. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was, you know, a short story somewhere, but, see, we're kind of, you know, so what we want to do today is Julie and I really want to go back into the mists of time and talk about our, you know, every great superhero needs an origin story.
I was going to say this could be the origin story episode.
This is the origin of the superiority complex.
Because our geekery.
Where did it come from? So what we're going to do is I'm going to take a quick break, because we're, you know, it's close to break time. We can probably spare a few minutes, but before we get, you know, actually talking into the episode about the topic proper, we'll take a quick break and let Julie get settled and maybe get a beverage, and we'll be right back after the break. We're back, everybody. Julie and I were just talking about our guilt complexes in the break. I should record the breaks one of these days.
Oh, my God, no. Some of the things we talk about should not be heard.
It all comes out of the break. So Julie is a geek, a self-avowed geek. What fascinates me is two things. We've discussed this on the show before. How much geek culture is basically just pop culture now. Like, that's just, you know, it's just
normal.
It's normal now. And, man, I wish it was that way when I was growing up. And then, just how many girls are into geek stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, I hate, and it's kind of like, you know, I always feel like I'm this old, like I'm being sexist about it, but like literally there were no geeky girls when I was a kid. Like,
or they were there, but they were like me, where they weren't open about it I wasn't, yeah. You know,
when did you first come out as a geek? Like when did,
honestly, like fully come out as a geek, yeah. Maybe not until I was, I want to say I'd been working at like Disney for like 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. It because of Doctor Who is what brought me out. I mean, yeah. I've always liked that kind of stuff. I've always, I'm Asian, so I have a lot of Asian friends that I grew up with. So all we do is play video games, yeah. You know, so like I've always been in that world. But when it comes to comics or things like Doctor Who or Star Trek or Star Wars, those kinds of things, I never really talked to anyone about it. It was just kind of like my own thing that I did because, you know, it's a I know it's wrong now. I was like, oh, it's a guy's thing.
And yeah. Stuff well, like no, that. I mean, that there's nothing wrong. That's just the way. You know, that's kind of the way it is. It's the mm-hmm. way it's the way it's marketed, and
yeah.
And I think it's also boys. I think men and women just enjoy things differently. Mm-hmm. The way they enjoy or the way they digest certain things. They, you know, there are certain, like I think Doctor Who appeals to guys because it's, you know, he's such a good character. It's a character who can think his way out of things. Mm-hmm. There's adventure, and a lot of girls are drawn to the fact that it's like, oh, well, there's like this unrequited love and there's like, you know,
yeah, a lot of girls do. For me, it's not really that. It's more like I always want to get away. Like I want to travel for a living. If that's a thing, someone please tell me, you know,
yeah.
Just traveling for a living is a thing. Cause that's what I want to do. So
Anthony Bourdain, man.
I think I told you, I'm like, I want to be either an Asian Felicia Day or a female Anthony Bourdain.
There you go.
Like, that's my life goal. So if there's anyone out there that knows how to get to that level, please let me know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know, I want you to think of this little dining room table as your TARDIS every time we come over.
Aww. Let's go on an adventure.
Let's go on an adventure. I'm going to bring that up. Remember that phrase, let's go on an adventure, because that is going to hook into this origin story. In a funny way, but
yeah.
So what would you say, you know, thinking back to like when you were a kid, like what are the things that kind of paved the way for your geekiness?
I guess just being around a lot of dudes. Like I had a lot of guy friends. I just kind of got along with them better. I mean, obviously I have a really close group of girlfriends, mm-hmm. and stuff, but when it comes to actually hanging out with people, I had a lot of guys around me all the time. So they were always playing video games and talking about comics and things like that. So, I just kind of drew those things off them. And I think also because my dad too, like I just grew up watching whatever movies he watched.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it was action movies. Like it's funny when people are like, oh, I was raised on these, you know, like I watched Disney movies obviously, but I'm like, I was raised on like Die Hard and like Air Force One and Indiana Jones.
Yes. Or perfect.
Yeah. Those kinds of things. And so, I think Indiana Jones was one of the first big series that I watched as a kid. And yeah. I was obsessed with it. Loved Indy. My first celebrity crush, Harrison Ford. He was so sexy, you know. I was like, I was in love with him. And then from there, I actually honestly didn't get into Star Wars very early. You know, I saw bits and pieces of it, but never connected with it until, you know, I realized that it was the same, like along the same lines of Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. kind of thing. It'd be like the same writing and all that stuff. And so that's when I actually sat down and watched it. And then it was just all gone from there. Totally obsessed. Loved it.
Yeah.
I'm a very like obsessive person where when I find something that I love, I latch onto it with dear life.
I am the same way. I am the same way. And then you just like, my friend, you know, my friend John Sandy always says, cause he's the same thing. He's like, he goes, I will just glom onto it and just suck it dry until there's nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like, but the nice thing is he brought it up. He said the nice thing about being like a geek in that is that you just don't toss it away. Now it's like it's in your repertoire.
Yeah,
almost.
It's in your system.
It's in your system now. And so you refer back to it constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I got the same way, you know, when I read my first Sherlock Holmes story, or when I read, you know, I'll do that with a band, or when I saw my first, you know, you know, you just get that way, and then it's part of you. It becomes part of who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
For me, that was part of it. I would say a bigger part of getting into that world was reading.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in school and things like that, the assigned reading, I would never really connect to the ones that are about real life. It was always, you know, Brave New World, or I picked up 1984 when I was like in middle school. I know it's not an appropriate book to read when you're in middle school, but I loved it. You know, Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451,
Yeah. Those
kinds of books I really, really connected to, because my head's always in the clouds and I want to be in that fantasy world or sci-fi world. And then, the other thing that really got me into it was Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty much the same age as, you know, as the characters when the books came out.
Yeah.
So I grew up with them. They literally became part of my life.
That's so much funny, because I'm so much older than you, Julie. But because of the because of the geekiness, it's like, you know, it brings
us together.
It bridges that gap.
Yeah.
It's like anything else. It's like a love of, you know, I always say that about, even though you don't want to talk about sports, I always say that about when you go to, like, say, a Dodgers game, like, there are people there that maybe in real life wouldn't hang out or see each other, or maybe.
Yeah.
But you're there and you're rooting for a team, and it's, you know, it's like that anywhere. And so now for the next 3 hours, you've got something in common with this guy next to you, and, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think geekiness kind of, bridges those gaps. And I know for me, they didn't really call them geeks at the time. You were a nerd. But I always thought the term nerd, I always thought that meant that you were smart. So I never thought
it's like the opposite. That's
weird. I always think nerdy, like a nerd is just like someone who's like, just like hitting the books all the time. And so.
That's weird. I totally think it's the opposite. I think like nerd is someone who is, you know, into the nerd culture with, you know, Star Wars and all that kind of stuff. And then geek is the one that's like more of like a math geek or engineering geek. That's so weird. I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
We should look into that.
Well, whichever one,
I think it's interchangeable.
Whichever one you assume is not the smart one, that's the one I always saw myself as. And so, but yeah, when I was a kid, it was weird because my dad was, my parents, I was the third kid, and my brothers are way older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the accident. So, I was the oops.
Oh.
But yeah, I think my dad was like already into his, I think he was like maybe my age now when I was born. So first of all, I can't even imagine that, my God. And then second of all, you know, my dad was a guy who, he would, same thing, loved, you know, action movies, you know, and stuff like that. But at the same time had a real soft spot for like all the, when he was a kid, you know, had seen all of like the Universal horror movies, like in re-release, like in the 40s, mm-hmm. you know? And so he loved like any kind of monster movie. He loved like science fiction, anything with aliens in it. He loved it, like anything with like, and it was funny because I have another uncle and they're the same age, and my uncle cannot stand anything like everything he watches. Like he would watch, one of my uncle's favorite movies was Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, this is real. This really happened. You know, like
yeah.
this is like, or he'd watch like The Man Who Would Be King would be like that was like the furthest out he would go. He wouldn't mm-hmm. watch like Indiana Jones is too far out. Like, you know what
really?
I mean? Yeah. Oh. So it would be like, he'd watch The Man Who, because that's like real. It's rooted in like realism, you know, like,
yeah.
or like historical. So I would always kind of thought that it was weird that my dad and my uncle it was my dad's brother-in-law, but they were the same two guys from the same age, and they just couldn't have been, you know, farther apart on, you know, where I think my dad would be able to watch Lawrence of Arabia and appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle wouldn't be able to do like go the opposite way. He wouldn't be able
Got
to watch.
It.
So, I always remember him watching movies like the original Thing from like the 50s, like, mm-hmm. you know, and my dad telling me, oh, I saw this in a movie theater and a lady fainted when the like alien popped out or whatever.
That's funny.
You know what I mean? Like he would tell me these stories, you know,
That's
so
really funny. Cause it's, yeah, no.
Yeah. So, he took me to see Star Wars when I was, you know, I was in kindergarten. I was five. And, when Star Wars came out, and I, you know, I've told the story on the podcast before. I can remember every detail of that day. You know, there are details of that day that I remember perfectly. And so even to the point where, you know, my family made a lot of fun of me growing up, cause I used to collect all the Star Wars figures
yeah.
and I was obsessed. And my cousin Peter, who somehow escaped that sort of scrutiny somehow, even though we would play Star Wars together, and we would always, he and I would play Star Wars. You know, those were big parts of my life growing up, was the whole Star Wars thing. So we would just play it obsessively. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even to the point where because of that, and I kind of had that reputation in my family as the geeky one. Mm-hmm. I told that story at my father's funeral. That was part of the eulogy I gave him was, you know, mm-hmm. this was like one of the best days of my life when my dad took me to see Star Wars. And I told that story. And, but yeah, it was like, but he loved it just as much as I did.
Yeah.
Like he loved, I mean, we went to see Empire. I remember you mentioned Star Wars. When we went to see Raiders of the Lost Ark, that was the only movie I can remember, because my brothers were much older than me, that all of us seeing together mm-hmm. with, like, my brothers were there, my mom and dad were there. Aww. My brothers were married already, their wives. We all went, and I was maybe like 10 when Raiders came out.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so like those were huge. My dad loved like Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. I remember my senior year of high school, we were going to the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade came out like right before I graduated. It was like May. We were, you know, right before we graduated, and we went to go catch it at like when there was a theater nearby. It's gone now, but there was a theater nearby, and we were all hanging out at my house before. And one of my friends just goes, asks my dad, they're like, "Hey, do you want to come with us?" And my dad's like, "Sure." So there we are, waiting in line for the. It looked like my dad was chaperoning us, but it was really cool because he was like, "Yeah, I'll go." Like, you know, he was down to go check it out, you mm-hmm. know. But I remember seeing that like opening day, like that Friday, and nice. Getting in line and seeing all those. But
I wish I could have had that experience because, like, I love it so much. And I actually was able to see, oh my God, which one did I see in theaters? Was it Raiders?
Oh, when they re-released it in IMAX?
Yeah. Which one was it?
It was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. I was able to see that in theaters.
It was awesome.
It was really cool.
My cousin Peter and I went to see it again, and I couldn't believe how awesome it looked when they remastered it for IMAX.
I know. I was really happy that I was able to see it in theaters.
There's something about seeing...
I didn't get that experience, you know, when it came out.
There's something about seeing a movie you love in the theater, even if you've seen it a million times. We took my daughter to see Wizard of Oz in 3D when it just came out.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know what? I am not a huge... we've talked about it. Gravity is like the only 3D movie I've ever really liked. Mm-hmm. The Wizard of Oz in 3D was gorgeous. It basically looked like you were watching a stage production.
I can imagine.
It was... I couldn't believe it looked amazing in IMAX, and it was
You're getting really good with the 3D, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, you know, they're using it for... The way Pixar uses it, and they're using it for depth.
Mm-hmm. Instead of like,
yeah. So like when the Twister's coming towards the farm, mm-hmm. it was way off in the distance, but it looked huge still because it was the IMAX was the tall. And then when they were in Oz, you know, you can see the Yellow Brick Road like painted like far, and it just looked, it gave it such depth.
Oh, cool.
Going far off into the distance.
Wish I could have seen that.
And you're really amazed. I was really amazed at how much Victor Fleming really framed a lot of that. Like when you see, you're like, oh my gosh, it's always been framed that way. But it's just the 3D. He was trying to, you know, give that illusion of depth.
Yeah.
But it looked really, really cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I try to go see stuff that I love. Like, we went to see Singing in the Rain. I took my daughter because that's her favorite. That's one of my favorite movies, period.
Me too. I think it's probably in my top five, I want to say. Singing in the Rain. Yeah. Always good on like when you're not having a good day.
Yeah.
Throw it on in the background.
And
awesome.
It looked beautiful again. And I had never seen it on the big screen, and it just looked really, really cool.
I saw it on the big screen one time. It was like a special, I forget which theater it was, but they were doing a special, you know, vintage week thing where they were just playing a bunch of old movies. And I was like, I have to see Singing in the Rain.
Yeah. You know, one movie that I've never seen on the big screen, and this has a lot to do with me being a geek, King Kong. King Kong was, oh, my wife's going to kill me. She's always telling me about the phone.
Good job. Everything's ruined. We might as well just finish now.
All right, we're done, guys. Thank you. I'm not even going to edit that out. I'm going to let it. She's going to be so mad.
So King Kong?
Yes, the greatest movie of all time. No, one of my, honestly, one of my favorites. I don't know how you feel about it. The original.
I'm meh about King Kong. Like,
what?
I'm not really into the big, like, big monster.
First of all, wrong.
I know. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Whatever. No, it's the same. I get judged for that. I don't really like the big monster movies, other than, like, Pacific Rim, because they're also robots.
Yes.
But.
And you're Asian, so you have to appeal to here.
I guess so, you know. But the other one that a lot of people judge me for is Jurassic Park. I'm terrified of dinosaurs because of that movie, and therefore I am not a fan of it. And I know it's like, it's in the geekdom,
mm-hmm.
and most nerds are obsessed with it and things like that, but I can't do it. I'm so scared of them.
Well, you have to look at it the way, you know, you have to kind of think of it the way, you know, people always think about Jaws. Same director, you know, Spielberg. Mm-hmm. People always think of Jaws as this horror movie. And when you watch it, the first part is kind of a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the second part is this really great, like, kind of sea story. It's like these three guys out on a boat,
yeah.
and they're like the conflicting personalities, and it's like this adventure, and my dog is mauling. And I think he kind of did the same thing with Jurassic Park, where it's part horror story, it's part, like, but there's also some really, like, there's a lot of adventure in there.
All I remember is the horror. Because I watched it when I was young, at a very impressionable age, I guess you can say. And I watched most of it between, like, you know, the spaces of my fingers,
because
I was so scared. And I remember having nightmares about it for, a week.
Have you revisited it since?
I tried to, but I'm so afraid of dinosaurs now that I can't watch it without getting like, oh, God.
The first one's the only one to really watch. The other two are okay. The second one's not good. The third one, I think, is not as bad as people think it is, because mm-hmm. it was done by some, I think it was Joe Johnston. But try to revisit it and see, like, as an adult, and see what you...
I can try, but I mean, this is how afraid I am of them. I went to Universal Studios with someone, and they forced me to go on the Jurassic Park ride. And I was like, I don't want to. I'm pretty sure it's going to scare the crap out of me. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I got off it, and I was crying. This was when I was like 19, too, by the way. So it wasn't like that super long ago. But I seriously, when the T-Rex comes out of the waterfall, I almost peed my pants. And my heart was racing the entire time, you know. It was bad.
Wow.
So I'm terrified of
stuff. Spielberg really did a number on you, man.
He did. I think it was just like the wrong situation that I watched it in, and I was young and stuff, so it always stuck with me. And now I'm just like, I'm so scared.
It's okay. He did the same thing to me with Jaws, because I was terrified of going in the swimming pool at my mom and dad's house. I wouldn't even go in the pool because I was afraid of sharks. And then he did it again in Close Encounters, where it's supposed to be like these friendly aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And the first alien comes out and has these freakishly long arms and looks really weird.
Uh-huh.
And boy, that scared me when I was a little kid. And then Poltergeist. Oh, no, that wasn't Spielberg. I think that was Zemeckis. Was it Spielberg?
I don't know.
I think he produced it. Spielberg produced it.
I have no idea. I don't watch horror movies.
I don't remember. You don't watch horror movies?
I'm such a pansy. Like, seriously, I'm such a pansy.
Have you seen Cabin in the Woods?
I haven't, but I actually want to see that one.
You should.
I heard it's good. It's Joss. It's Whedon.
You should see it.
Yeah. It's not too scary, right? People say it's not really scary. It's more of a play on
horror movies. Yeah. It's kind of a loving homage to horror movies.
Okay. That's what I've heard.
But there are some intense things, but it's more
I'll
of
watch
like,
it during the daytime.
It's more of like a gore scary than like, you know what I mean?
Which is fine with me, honestly. Like, gore scary doesn't bother me as much as like,
what's the scariest movie you've ever seen aside from Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park is up there. It's not even a horror movie. Scariest movie I've seen, probably The Exorcist.
Okay.
Or I saw most of The Ring. That scared the crap out of me. That one too. Yeah, it was on at one of my friend's house in high school. I think we were doing a project or something, and it was just kind of on, and we sat down kind of to watch it, and
check this out. You ready for a story? My buddy Hiddish, shout out to Hiddish. He used to live, he's moved now, he's moved up to the Bay Area, but in his old neighborhood, his neighbor who lived across the street, he had two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest daughter was the girl in The Ring that would come out of the...
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like a normal little, like, just just a normal kid.
Oh, she acts so creepy, though.
Yeah.
Well, good job to her. She freaked me out.
There's a really great little spoof of Japanese horror movies in Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
There's a little nice nod to the Japanese, like, that style of horror movie.
Yeah.
There's a certain name for it. I can't remember what it's called, but, mm-hmm. like, that type of horror, like, which is way creepier.
I don't do horror.
Which is way creepier than our horror. Like, they always have, like...
Yeah, they have a really different style.
Yeah, people's eyes being all black and stuff like that. And it's just like, nope. I remember...
I don't like it.
What did you say? You said something the other day. You posted something on Facebook about something walking around outside your house.
There was something...
And somebody posted, like, maybe it was this. And they, like, posted...
It was, like, a Slender Man or something. Yeah. I was like, how dare you?
You're like,
no.
You're just like, nope, nope, nope. That's all you wrote was no.
Nope.
Oh, so good.
It's like my go-to response. Nope.
Nope. So, when you were in school, Jules, so we're going back to, like, this is like maybe when late 90s, what, early teens or early zeros? When were you like in your elementary, junior high-ish?
Elementary, yeah, that would be early 2000s.
God, that's so weird.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's so weird.
I apologize.
I'm going to take a Geritol and then we'll be right back. No. So what kind of things were you into that were like, what were forming the Julie that would become now? Like, as you grew older, like, what did you, video games, obviously, like, what other things were coming into your
video games? I wasn't even a hardcore gamer. It was all the Nintendo games that were big then, just whatever was out, you know, Smash Brothers, that kind of stuff, whatever got like a group together to play. I played it. A lot of watching other people play, like Diablo. I know all my friends, Diablo and Warcraft, they were obsessed with this, so I watched them play all the time. So there was that. That was more like elementary schoolish age. And then as middle school came around, it was more Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the Harry Potter, the books have shaped so much of like who I am as a person because of like all the lessons that it taught in it and stuff like that. So loved Harry Potter. And then reading, starting to read a lot of science fiction books, like 1984 was one of my first ones.
So were you just, I mean, you kind of had the advantage of having the internet around like at that time.
Yeah.
And so I think it's easier. It was, do you think that made it easier for you to just go, oh, I can go from here to here to here and find this, this, and this.
For sure. But even then I wasn't even super crazy into it because I didn't really talk to anyone about it. You know, it was just more of, I had a writing tutor that was introducing a lot of books to me and saw what I liked. So it was like a weird combination. He would recommend, I almost forgot Stephen King.
Oh.
I love Stephen King.
Like, how funny. You don't like horror movies.
I know. I like, it's hard to explain. I like how he writes horror.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even read a lot of his hardcore, like really obvious horror stories. It's more like, I like his mystery thriller kind of style.
Yeah.
Or his fantasy sci-fi things. Like, I love the Dark Tower series and things like that. So, yeah, he was introducing a lot of that kind of stuff to us. It was a weird mix of Stephen King and Shakespeare that he was giving to me to read all the time. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and so I really like to write, too. So he was trying to shape that a little bit. But unfortunately, he had to move away, so I don't, I didn't get to talk to him.
Do you still do writing? Do you still write a little bit? Or?
I'm trying to. Who? I can't say that I do.
You're doing some Sherlock Doctor Who fanfic?
No, I don't do fanfic. It's weird. I can't bring myself to do it. It's really strange. Probably because I've read so much bad fanfic. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be in that world.
There's no such thing as good fanfic.
There's some okay ones, like short story ones, you know, like one-off people making pretend episodes for things.
I'm making a face at Julie right now. Like, I don't believe it.
Judgy.
The face of incredulity.
If I can find some, I'll send some to you, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. But,
was there a time where you wanted to like tell somebody, hey, look, this is what I'm into, or...
Were you able
to just kind of like hold it in and like...
I was able to hold it in like pretty much, even though like I was still known with my friends as the nerdy one or whatever, I never really talked about the things that I really, really was obsessed with because I felt like I was going to be judged for it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it did come up sometimes, even when I did become open about it, like going to comic book stores and having the people there be like, so are you getting this for your boyfriend? Or just seeing people looking at me a certain way.
I think that was more, they just wanted to find out if you had a boyfriend.
I don't know. It was a very judgy kind of like condescending tone that I would get a lot of times when I'd go to stores. And so I stopped going to comic book stores. It was like, I can't handle.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I know. It's getting better now because I don't care as much anymore. But when I first started, I guess, coming out with my nerdiness, I suppose you can call it, it bothered me a little bit. And even like when I started playing World of Warcraft for a little bit, I know... I'm one of those people. But yeah, I started playing World of Warcraft a lot, and I even went to the midnight release, like the big official event for them in Fountain Valley at Fry's. And so they had all like the game designers there, and they were signing the boxes that you would get for the game, which was, I was going crazy. I thought it was awesome. And I found that I went with one of my guy friends, and first of all, I got asked several times. They're like, they would look at me, look at my friend, and go, "Oh, you're here with your boyfriend?" I'm like, "No. I actually play," or I'd get asked like, "Oh, do you actually play the game?" You know, I'm like, why
would I be here?
Why am I being judged for this? You know, kind of thing. It was really weird. Or I would get tested, you know, they'd be like, "Oh, so," or, you know, they'd be like, "Oh, do you actually play?" I'm like, "Yes, I actually play." And be like, "Okay, well, what do you play?" Whereas the people around me, they weren't getting asked the same question. I was being asked.
Yeah. Because... Or you're asked by the designers?
Yeah. The designers. Wow. I know, right? I was like, it was really weird. And then I could also see like some people in line were looking at me kind of like, "Oh, she doesn't look like she belongs here." I'm like, just because, whatever, I'm a girl, first of all. And just because I don't even know like how to describe it. But like my friend was like, "You don't look like a World of Warcraft player." I'm like, "What is a World of Warcraft player?
It can't be camped,
anyone."
Unbathed. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, you just offended so many WoW players right now.
They don't listen.
They're too busy raiding.
Actually, you know, the comic book store I go to is named for a place in World of Warcraft.
It's Undercity. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's one of the hub cities.
Yeah. And so, but that was a thing when I walked in to that comic book store and the owner was there, Sue. She's been on the show before. Shout out to Sue. That's what I was like, sweet. Like, here is, because I was literally in there looking for comics for my daughter, and then I got sucked back into it, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, here's a person who, like, obviously will know, like, what's, you know? Because for me, I think it's awesome that kind of like there's a whole, I think it's great that girls are gaming now. I think it's great that girls are, because why should it be just for, it's just as fun to play a video game. My daughter has just as much fun playing Pokemon as her little cousin does. But I think it's something that it's the same thing that, you know, and we talked about this on the show, that girls are, you know, they show that, you know, up to a certain age girls have better scores in math and science, and then once they hit puberty it starts to fall away. And it's because their focus is elsewhere, but society tends to not encourage them to continue in whatever they were doing. It's just like, well, you're a girl, so now you're going to do this. Like, it's okay to be this good when you're little, but like now that you're, you know, you're growing up now, and so now you want to try to find a husband, and you know what
or
I mean?
They try to, you know, move girls toward more female, quote, female friendly subjects like literature or
which is,
you know, the arts and things.
Yeah,
like
which
that.
Is fine too.
Yeah, which is great. Like, that's the world that I grew up in.
Yeah, that's awesome, but why shouldn't there be? Why can't a girl design a game, or why can't a girl write a comic book, or why can't, like, you know? And so I think it's, you know, especially having a daughter now, like I've talked about some of the struggles she's had where she just wants to kind of, you know, there's a lot of flack for like the Lego, I'm looking at right now, the little Lego friend sets that are like marketed to girls.
And everything's like, pink.
Everything's pink.
Why is everything pink?
Everything's pink. But you know what? My daughter will play with those just as much as she'll play with like the regular Legos. It's just like now she can play with a set. It's like she's figured out that she can play with, oh, cool, now I can play this. It has pink and ponies, but I can build this X-Wing fighter too.
Right, yeah.
So like she sees it as a bonus where it's like, I can do two things. Like, nice. I can build this, like, we're going to build this DeLorean, but we're also going to, now I can have this little, you know, house where all her friends can hang out. And
you can build a DeLorean, but have a pretty little girl driving it instead.
Actually, you know, the only reason she wants those sets, those is because she uses the buildings as like sets for her little stop action movies.
That's awesome. Yeah. You're doing such a good job.
My daughter's taking a stop motion animation class right now.
I wish we had those.
Through the city. Yeah, right? They're like, they're filming. She just did the audio tracks yesterday, and they're going to put it all together and make a little DVD of it.
That's so cool. I can't wait to see it.
So we're talking about her little... You're talking about the origin of a little geek. There's one right there.
She's going to be so nerdy when she grows up.
Well, she's
so
in the,
awesome.
She's into comics. She's into gaming. She loves to read.
Mm-hmm.
And she reads a lot of, like... she hasn't read Harry Potter yet, but she's reading a lot of, like... Percy Jackson, and there's like some fantasy mm-hmm. stuff. There's a book called Dragon Rider that she loved. It was like a 1,000-page book. She read it twice because, you know, she's into like fantasy and stuff like that. So it's really, you know, she's really kind of getting her own. I'm trying to let her go her own way and try to, you know.
Oh, she kind of reminds me of me when I was younger.
I hope that would be awesome.
Maybe lots of fantasy stuff.
Maybe she could co-host this podcast one day.
Aww. That'd be awesome, yeah.
She's on it now, but she's squirrely. She just wants to be like, hey, I'm sorry about that. All right, Julie, let's take a quick break, and we're going to talk about your continuing blossoming as a geek. Or do you prefer nerd? Or
they're,
dork?
They're interchangeable at this point. Dork? No, dork is totally different to me.
Well, what's a...
Dork is more like an endearing way to call someone an idiot.
Yes. My daughter reads a series called The Dork Diaries, which is like the girl version of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the girl version. It's called Dork Diaries. So.
Cute.
I know. I have to hear about it all the time. All right. Oh, you know what we need to talk about? We need to... Oh, wait. Hold on.
I was like, write it down.
My daughter's really into Calvin and Hobbes, too.
Me too.
She's read them all.
Me too.
You know what's awesome? Is that... My friend Robert and I have this thing where we'll just quote Calvin and Hobbes, like, just in, like, conversation where we'll just, it'll be like, we'll see somebody, like, we'll see, like, a dog, like, inching towards somebody and just go, closer, closer. And, like, I can do that with her now. And aww. She'll know exactly which one I'm, like I'm talking
that's
about.
That's awesome.
Or, like, we'll be on the swings and we'll be like, ha-ha, I kissed the sweet ground. I'm like, oh, that's so great. You're quoting Calvin
and Hobbes. I have a younger brother. That's what I started to give him first to start getting into enjoying reading. Because I loved reading and he wasn't so much into it. And so I started giving him Calvin and Hobbes. Because it's comics, but it's still, you know,
it's
a lot of words. It's pretty, some of the stuff is kind of advanced and stuff like that. So I was giving it to him to read and then slowly started feeding him like Harry Potter or like Aragon. But that's what started him with reading a lot too.
Calvin and Hobbes is, I mean, if my daughter started reading it, she was in first grade when I gave her, she started looking at them and just thought some of them were funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she's reread them. I mean, she's read all of them.
Yeah, I think I have all of them too.
I had all of them and she's read them all at least like once through each of the books, or at least twice through now.
Mm-hmm.
But she, you know, there's like some serious, there's some philosophy in there. There's a lot of, Will Watterson was a great writer. And so he liked to write a lot about, he discusses commercialism and artistic merit and all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. So she's getting an education whether she knows it or not. She just thinks it's funny.
Yep.
All right. We will be right back with my friend and your new friend, Julie King. We're back with segment three, guys. I know. We're going to go 2 hours today. No, we're not. We're going to wrap it up soon because we have to go to lunch. Julie was eating a lot in the break, and I'm just kidding.
It's a bag of chips.
Julie was talking about something. Let's deviate for a second. Julie was originally wanted to be an actress.
Sure.
And now, Julie, if you don't mind telling the story, what made you not be an actress? Because why?
Okay, so I think that I was pretty good, honestly. Like, there are some things in my life where I felt like I was pretty good at, but my parents convinced me to not do it. One was dance.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of ballroom dancing. And then the other was acting, which I did a lot in high school. I was in drama and everything, did a lot of festivals and competitions, that kind of thing. So I really enjoyed it. And in middle school was when I was introduced to it. And I really wanted to go to the performing arts high school in Orange County. But my parents, they told me there was no future in that for me because I'm Asian. Mm-hmm. There are not a lot of Asian roles out there. they're like, even in commercials, even in those like small, tiny roles, they're not casting Asian people. It's all white people or black people. And, you know, you're never going to get a job. And so now I'm mad because there are a lot of Asian faces out there I see now.
There are now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, your parents weren't wrong in a way that in the, you know, at least if you wanted to stay in this country and have a career, that might not have, you may have been like a bit.
Yeah. At that time, probably. You know, but, yeah. You know, now as I'm getting older and stuff, and like another thing that I was talking about with someone else at one time was what makes me mad is there are a lot of Asians in sci-fi roles,
yeah.
In things that I love because, you know, sci-fi is all about the future and stuff mm-hmm. and people, a lot of cultures mixing together, like in, you know, like in Firefly,
yeah.
You see them all the time, or even Battlestar Galactica,
yeah.
Like she's one of the main characters,
sure.
You know, so in a lot
you're
of things
probably
I
a better love, actress than she is. She's not very.
Yeah, you know, I love her.
I know she is, but you see her get better as mm-hmm. the show goes on.
You do,
but,
yes.
But as in the early roles, you could tell that it's like, okay. That, and that's the thing that drives me nuts about that show is where you have like really good acting and then there's some other actors where you're just like, wow. Because you feel like Edward James Olmos and Mary McDonnell really do a lot of the heavy lifting on
oh,
that
yeah,
show.
For sure. Yeah.
And then everybody else is just kind of like, well, you know, that's one of the things when I was watching Battlestar was I thought, dude, finally, like, there's a Mexican in space. We made mm-hmm. it. Like, we made it. Like,
you made it to space.
Even though he wasn't, like, supposed to be Mexican, I was like,
we freaking
made it, man. We uh-huh. freaking made it to space. But, yeah, I really was, like, super pumped about that. And it was a thing where, you know, and during the run of the show, they kept saying, well, he doesn't know if he's going to be back. And it's mm-hmm. like, come on, dude, just stick with it. Like, just see it all the way through because... You know, you're just like, it's such a good role for him. And I thought mm-hmm. he did a good job and he really brought a lot of that gravitas to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
He was brilliant. Yeah, he was my favorite.
Yeah.
I was so afraid for him the entire series. I was like, if anything happens to him, I am done with this show. I'm like, things can happen to the other characters and I'll be sad and
yeah.
I'll be hurt. But if anything happens to Adama, I will throw
you know,
the table.
And it was awesome. Was he's a guy that really does a lot. He underplays a lot of stuff, and there's that great scene where they're looking for Starbuck, and you know Lee says something like, you know, what would you do if it was me out there? And he said, if it was you, we would never leave. And then he just walks off, and mm-hmm. it wasn't like he didn't have to like cry, he didn't like well up or anything. He just says it like that's
yeah.
just the way it is, and you're like,
one of my WoW characters is named after Bill Adama.
What's his name? Husker?
No, it's just Bill. I think it's just Bill Adama and then with two A's at the end because someone already took Bill Adama. So.
My friend, my friend Shauna, she lives out in Colorado and she was responsible. This is how awesome she is. And she is one of the original geek girls. When I couldn't get Mystery Science Theater because we didn't have cable. We didn't have the channel that carried it on our cable.
Mm-hmm.
She would send us tapes from Colorado. She would send
wow.
me and my wife like tapes back when
That's
my wife
awesome.
And I were dating. But she would, she used to like send me, she was the only other person I know that was watching Galactica, like in the run.
Mm-hmm.
So she would send me these emails and she would always refer to Adama as Husker. It would used to make me laugh. She's like, oh, what has Husker gotten himself into?
That's pretty awesome.
What's Husker going to do? So, shout out to Sean. I don't know if she listens, but, she is an amazing, also very much into Star Wars and all of that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's funny is we're talking about this. I've watched my wife evolve into, she's not quite as geeky, but I think some of the things like Indiana Jones and Back to the Future and things like that, you know, they were just part of the pop culture and you just sort of, you know, you didn't really need to be a geek to enjoy
no.
any of that.
Yeah.
Like I always say that about Star Wars. Like the mm-hmm. non-geekiest people I know like Star Wars.
Everybody likes Star Wars.
Yeah. You know, and so you know, you don't necessarily have to be like wearing a Star Wars shirt doesn't necessarily have to paint you as like, oh, look at this guy.
Yeah.
But if you come out wearing like, you know, I saw a guy the other day that said had a shirt that said brown shirts, brown something about the brown
shirts. Brown
shirt. Coats? Oh, the brown coats. I'm sorry. The brown shirts are the Hitler Youth. Oh my God, I can't stop doing
that. Like from Firefly, right?
Yeah, but the brown shirts were the Hitler Youth. That's what they were called.
Oh.
That's I can't stop doing it.
What is up with you lately? Hitler.
I hate Nazis, man. I hate them.
It's probably your daughter.
Yeah, I do have a deep-seated, like... Man, that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark at the end is so satisfying.
It is.
Right? Where mm-hmm. God just like takes out it's like so much better than seeing him take him out with a rocket launcher. It's like, nope, we're going to melt some faces.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so much more satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like, somehow it's like, oh, yes.
I still remember watching it as a kid, too, and thinking it was so terrifying and gory. And now you watch it, you're like, that is the cheesiest thing, but so awesome.
Back at the time, I'm telling you, when I was 10 in the theaters, that was terrifying. Like, watching their faces melt was like, ugh. He had a brown coat shirt on, and I thought, see, that guy's like letting his geek flag fly, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, or people that, that, you know, I saw when they did Day of the Doctor, there were people coming out of the movie theater, and this kid was maybe like 11 years old, dressed as David Tennant. You know what I mean? Like, had the suit, everything down, like, you know, everything dressed as Tennant.
That makes my heart so warm.
Yeah. And so,
so happy.
Yeah, I love that it's a little more open now, you know, like,
I hate other nerds that complain about that. There are those hipster nerds. Oh, it's mainstream now. It's not cool anymore. Blah, blah, blah. Everyone likes it. What is wrong with everyone liking it?
Yeah.
It's an enjoyable thing. Let people like it. It's like, I use the argument for Star Wars. Everybody likes Star Wars. It doesn't take away from the fact that it's an amazing series.
Yeah.
You know,
it's still great.
Same with Doctor Who. Like, just calm down.
So what?
That means it's easier to get souvenirs and like merchandise.
Exactly.
That's what I say.
That's where you got to look at it, man. Yeah, you have to. But you know, it's funny. I brought that up before where like it's so funny. Like, even in geek circles, there's a hierarchy.
Yeah, it's so really annoying.
So when you go to the comic book store, all the guys that collect the comic books are making fun of the guys that are playing like Magic the Gathering, you know, and the Magic the Gathering guys are like, well, we're better than the Yu-Gi-Oh guys. And the Yu-Gi-Oh guys are like, oh, well, we're better than the, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then like, or you know, it's just funny. Like, they just, it's funny to me how in even in geek cultures, you'd think we would be all inclusive.
No, it is. That's so not the case, you know? And then even if you're a comic fan, how diehard of a comic fan are you?
Yeah.
I get that a lot where like I said, people for some reason will want to test me.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, okay, well, if you're a fan of this character, then what happened in this storyline in issue blah blah blah, and I'm like, I don't freaking know. Like, I didn't read that one.
Yeah.
I just like the character.
Yeah,
why do I have to prove myself?
I think the character's awesome, and I'm getting,
the universe is so big.
I'm getting back in, like, as a person who's getting back into comics, and like last year I just went out and bought everything. And this year I'm more like, okay, this is what I like. And it's funny, I like the stuff that's more sci-fi. Like, Brian K. Vaughan is writing a series right now called Saga. And I think as a sci-fi person, you would love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's basically a love story. And it's like these two worlds. There's a planet and a moon. And the moon, you know, has its inhabitants, and they're at war with the people on the planet. And the war has now gotten so big that it's like spread throughout the galaxy, and now they're like fighting by proxy. So it's like World War One,
mm-hmm.
where all these other countries are fighting each other, and you know, some are, you know, we're on this side, and we're, you know, and so this couple, one's from the moon and the guy's from the moon and the girl's from the planet. They end up falling in love.
I won't ruin
the story, and they have a baby. Everybody's after this baby, and the awesome thing is the baby is narrating the story.
What?
Like, she's telling the story as like looking back.
She's
it's really, really awesome. It's really, really well done, and it's really funny and really good. And so like, those are the kind of stories that kind of, but the characters look like, the guys on the moon look like something right out of, Chronicles of Narnia. They look almost like fawns.
Cool.
And the people on the planet like have wings. They're like, and then there's like this other race of robots, and they have like their heads are like computer screens, and they're hunting and there's all these like, there's like freelancers, like these bounty hunters, mm-hmm. and they're after them, and it's really, really interesting. There's like,
so it's super sci-fi,
but it's like such a fully realized world.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love that.
I think that's what I love. That's one of the things that draws me up to sci-fi. Like, what, like, now that we know your origins, like, Julie, like, what kind of sci-fi are you drawn to? Are you drawn to like, do you like it all? Do you have like a particular, do you like dystopian sci-fi? Do you like, you know,
I'm not as drawn to dystopian sci-fi, even though I do love like Hunger Games and stuff.
Yeah.
And Divergent. You should read that series too.
We have it here. My wife read the first book,
uh-huh.
because my daughter got it for Christmas.
I was just about to say your daughter would probably really like
so
it.
She, my,
it's a young adult's book. So.
Yeah, the only thing I think the I don't spoiler alert. I think the main character's parents die.
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife's like, because my daughter's super sensitive about stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I see.
So my wife's like, maybe we'll hold off. My wife thought it was really good. She loved it. Mm-hmm. She thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah, making it into a movie, so that's exciting. But I don't know. I like things that are in a very far away place, in a very far away world, but with the same sort of like social struggles that we face today. Mm-hmm. Like I like seeing things that are like way off in the future, in another world, another planet, another dimension, just not in ours, but they still face the same problems that we do.
So no wonder you love Galactica, because that's right.
Oh
there.
Yeah. Like I was actually really mad at myself after I watched it for not mm-hmm. watching it sooner, but I think it came at a good time and I'm obsessed with it now. So it's the right time to
watch it. Like, what would you recommend? Are there like particular movies that you think of? Like, I mean, like Hunger Games or like, you know, like.
I mean,
Hunger Games is kind of dystopian.
Yeah, it is dystopian. So I do love the Hunger Games, though. Yeah. That was another one I had a hard time getting into at first. The book started off really slow, but once I started, I couldn't stop, kind of thing. I don't know. There are just some staple ones that I feel like everyone should read if they want to get into sci-fi, like Brave New World,
mm-hmm.
old
Aldous
school.
Huxley, yeah.
Yeah, super old school sci-fi. Ender's Game.
I just read that for the first time. I had never read it. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those ones that was always on my radar.
Yeah.
And I just was like, you know what? The movie's coming out. I just want to read it.
I haven't watched the movie.
I haven't either, but I was like, the movie's coming out. Why have I not read this book?
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. It was great. Really good book. Yeah.
What else? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's another one I absolutely love. I go back to that one all the time because it's funny.
That was so huge when I was growing up. That was like, I remember people having it in their backpack, like people I used to hang out with. And that was like,
nowadays it's not as huge.
No,
I feel like it's hard to find people that
it kind of died. It was huge in the 80s. Everybody mm-hmm. read it back in the 80s. Everybody read it.
We should bring it back. I know like the movie wasn't. You know, it was
Martin
okay.
Freeman was in it, though.
He was. It was an okay, it was an entertaining movie, but obviously the books are freaking amazing. Love them so much. They're so funny. I just like the writing style, lighthearted and stuff. Just random things everywhere. I don't know. What else is like staple sci-fi? But I mean, like I like fantasy, too. Like all the Harry Potters, all the Lord of the Rings, even though I like The Hobbit more as a book. The Lord of the Rings series.
Lord of the Rings is hard to get through.
Tolkien he's one of those that constructs the world first and then inserts a story.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, say, Chronicles of Narnia is story first and then there's a world crafted around
it. I always liked Narnia better growing up. I loved that one.
I really
like
Narnia too.
I loved it. I was really sad. My daughter really never took to it. She read them. She read some of them and was like, okay. But I was like obsessed when I was a kid. I loved Chronicles.
Yeah, when I was younger, I really liked them. And then I read that alongside with, do you remember A Wrinkle in Time?
Yes. Madeline Lang. I can never say her name last name.
Langle, right?
Madeline Langle.
I want to go back and read it because I remember a lot of really weird things happening. But I was really young when I read it, so I didn't quite grasp it. And I was like, well, that's just weird. I feel like if I go back and read it now, it'll be really awesome and trippy. And along with, what's another good one? The Giver. Even though it's a kid's book, that's a really good one, too. It's kind of a little bit dystopian as well, but real enough. You know.
When I was a kid, one thing that really, like, a true staple of geekhood, like, I never played Dungeons and Dragons when I was growing up. That was huge back in the 80s, too. Mm-hmm. And that figures into Ready Player One a lot. But what I really was obsessed with, and my cousin Peter and I would trade every summer when we'd see each other, were Choose Your Own Adventure books. And when I was a kid, every geek worth his salt read those Choose Their Own Adventure books. So much so, when you said the words, let's have an adventure, my friends and I kind of took the idea, we didn't play Dungeons and Dragons, but we knew like what the Dungeon Master would kind of do the story for you. So I used to do these things. I remember in elementary school with a couple of my buddies, we would just go like, you know, if there was a day where like it would be at recess and like you had maybe like 10 minutes and, you didn't have time for a kickball game or something or tetherball, or if the tetherball courts were full, we do this thing where it'd be like, hey, let's do an adventure. Let's go on an adventure. And so one person it was basically an oral version of a Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Mm-hmm.
And it always had to do, and this is what's funny, it always had to do, me and my friend were obsessed with zombies. And this was before, like, Walking. This is like mid-80s. So we had both maybe seen, like, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. And it was like, okay, you wake up one day and you walk outside and there's zombies everywhere. Okay, so what do you do next? Okay, I run in the house and I start hammering the door. Okay, as soon as you start, I start nailing up the door. Okay, as soon as you start nailing, now the zombies know where you are because they can hear the sound of the nailing. So they start trying to get in the window.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, we used to do that. We would just be like, and there were no rules. It was just like, whatever they made up. Okay, there's a helicopter on the roof and. It can't land because your roof is at an angle. So it's 5 feet. Do you try to jump? Yes. Okay, you didn't get a running start, so you fell into the zombies and you died.
Oh, like, my God, just that's awesome. See, I used to do stuff like that, but by myself with, like, Pokemon. Like, I had, my parents gave me a tape recorder, and so I'd make, like, a radio show by myself.
Oh, my God.
And I, like...
Do any of those exist?
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
I really think they don't. I think we recorded over them or something. But I would do stuff like that with Pokemon.
You're young enough to have used tape. That is great. At least
At least I know what a cassette tape is.
We used to do things like that. So I was lucky enough that I got to the school that I moved to we moved when I was in third grade. And we moved to a neighborhood where we moved from a neighborhood that was predominantly Mexican to a neighborhood where that was predominantly white. So immediately felt, and I'm sure the kids back then were nice enough. I still talk to a lot of people I went to elementary school with to this day. But at the time, you just feel, you just don't feel like you belong because you didn't grow up in this world. And so the friends I ended up making were people that we had this group of guys that would just, the first friend I had, he had been at school like 2 weeks before. So it was like, we became immediate buddies because it was like, okay, you came to this school too. You're new.
Yeah.
Then the next year, okay, here comes this kid and he's new to the school and, speaks fluent Japanese. So now his parents are from Japan and he's like, so now I'm going to learn about all his stuff, we got this and then in seventh grade, meeting one of my best friends in the whole wide world. Oh, we just moved here. My family's from India. And cool. So now we're going to hang out. And it's like, okay, so now we're like this motley group of just guys that are all into like nerdy stuff. But my friend Hiddish was always the anomaly because he was really good at sports. And so he was really good. Like, he'd be like, I'm going to go play basketball or baseball. And he was awesome. We'll play football.
Yeah.
But then he'd sit around and we'd go to comic book stores on the weekends. And like, he knew everything there was to know about the X-Men and like we'd collect comic books.
I love that combination. I love when people can like go outside of it. And I think that's another reason why like I never really had to come out soon with like my geeky stuff is because I was kind of awkward, like super awkward as a kid, really quiet sometimes. I mean, with my close friends, I wouldn't be. So like my close friends will listen to this or hear me talk about being shy and stuff. They're like, no, you weren't. I'm like, not around you guys, obviously. But like out in the world, I was really awkward. I wouldn't talk to anyone. So yeah, I didn't feel like I was an attractive child. If you look at my old pictures, I was really just not a cute kid. And so I was like, I need to develop other things to supplement my personality so that I'm not just awkward. And so, I started to do theater. I started to dance. I went a lot of art classes. I read a lot, made sure that I was like a smart person so that I wasn't just left with nothing.
Yeah. It's funny. I felt that way too. As soon as I hit puberty, man, I was a skinny, skinny kid. And then puberty hit.
I started packing on the pounds.
And it's like, man, why do I have to be the fat kid? Like, this sucks. So if you're going to be fat, you better be funny. So I used to really just hone the, and at the time I was really into like David Letterman. David Letterman was on after Carson. It was like, so my dad would always let me stay up late, like, and watch Johnny Carson. And I remember like my dad would fall asleep in front of the TV. So I'd just stay up late and watch the whole thing. And then like David Letterman would come on. Letterman was doing stuff like, oh, let's take these watermelons and drop them off of a 10-story building to see what it looks like. Okay, now let's do fluorescent tubes. Like just to do stuff. And it's like, this is awesome. It's like what a fifth grader would do if he had a TV show. Like this is perfect. So it was like that. That was like that kind of comedy was right in my wheelhouse. And I used to think like David Letterman was such a such a hero of mine when I was like 12, 13, when I was really trying to like kind of hone, like you're kind of becoming who you're going to become.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going in high school yet and you're like, okay, this is who I'm going to be. And that's really who I wanted. I really liked that since he was like, oh, an adult can be this way too. Like an adult can be just like a total smart ass.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
That's how I felt about Bill Nye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that, see, oh, Bill Nye was like, that's so awesome for like such a generation to have that person to look up to. Because David Letterman was really kind of geeky for the time because he wasn't like this smooth, suave guy. And he would kind of, now he's kind of become this curmudgeon. But if you really look up... If you look up some of his clips from the 80s, it was like nobody was doing what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was because he's like, we're on at 12:30, nobody's watching.
So you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, and it's comedy. You know, comedy, there's a whole, I was a comedy geek too when I was growing up. I was really into things like Monty Python and Mel Brooks and, you know, Airplane and like, you know.
Another
just,
one in my top.
That's, yeah, if you're a geek, you have to be well-versed in like geeky comedy movies, you know. Mm-hmm. And the 80s were a beautiful time for like nerdy comedy. You had like Real Genius and, you know, movies like that that were coming out. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, all those really, really went to shape like who, what my personality became. But I think the things that I were into were always just... It was always the thing you brought it up. The great thing about sci-fi is that it takes you to another place and it's these fully realized worlds that are just, you know, and you know, it's just another, and you have to kind of learn there's rules. Mm-hmm. And what I love about getting into a new sci-fi book or a new sci-fi franchise or a new is that you kind of have to learn how the way that world works.
Yeah. It's every single one of them is different.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So how do these people communicate and what's the social structure like and all that stuff. And I love that. You know?
I also like alternate realities. I love anything where there's an alternate reality. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read a book called, The Man in the High Castle?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know if you'll like it, but it has a lot to do with what is the name of the Chinese text? Is it the I Ching? The one that does that people use it to actually like try to predict the future, but it's actually that tells you how like what kind of person you'll be. Like it's like I forgot what properties it's supposed
to. I don't know.
I think it's called the I Ching. But I think it's from Confucianism. I think it's used. But anyway, Philip K. Dick, who wrote the book that became Blade Runner, wrote this book called The Man in the High Castle. And The Man in the High Castle takes place in a universe. And this is the kind of stuff I love just because it's so nerdy on one level. It takes place in a universe where America... Okay, it all hinges on one point. So in real life, there was a failed assassination attempt of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So in the book, Roosevelt is assassinated, and the person who gets elected in 1940 is a pacifist. So he keeps America out of World War II too long. And so what ends up happening is by the time America jumps into the war, Germany and Japan are way too strong, and we lose.
Oh.
So since we're so far away from everybody else, the America ends up getting divided into two zones. The West Coast is run by the Japanese and the East Coast is run by the Germans. And so Middle America is kind of like this demilitarized zone where, you know, people can travel and stuff, but you're still it's still not free.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in this world writes a book, and the name of the book is called The Grasshopper Lies Heavy. And in that book, he writes about what would have happened if America had won the war.
Whoa.
So there's like whole, this is a whole thing about like this world within a world.
So many layers.
Yeah, there's so many layers.
I love it.
And it's all about how what's funny is in the book that he writes, he almost gets it close to what would have been, but it's not, it's still not quite like our.
Oh, that is so interesting.
And so the
and it's by the person that wrote Blade Runner, right?
Yeah, Philip K. Dick, and who was probably using a lot of drugs at the time, but the Man in the High Castle is the person that wrote the book. Mm-hmm. So it's this. There's all these people that read the book and are affected by it, and they want to go find out like where he lives. They try to find out who he is. And he's kind of like wanted because he's, you know, it's kind of like, it's basically, you know, this stuff can be used, you know, as, you know, against the government.
Yeah.
It's
like propaganda.
Yes. Propaganda. So, it's a really, really good book worth checking out. It's called, it's not a long read, but if you like, that's kind of like that kind of stuff just blows me away too, where it's like there's, you know, it's sci-fi, but it takes place in this realistic world where, you know, it's, you know, the same tables, the same lights, same that we, that exist in this universe.
Yeah. I like that too. I mean, the, like I said, even though The Giver is a kid's book, that's kind of the same thing where it's in our world, but there's a tweak. Something went wrong.
I have never read that. I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah. It's definitely like, it's for kids. It's one of those that had the, Newbery Award.
I was just going to say, is it like the Newbery Award?
Yeah.
Some of the kids' books are great, though.
Exactly.
Some, you know, you know what's funny? There's a quote of that in Saga. There's a character in Saga like who's kind of like the man in the high castle, and they go to find him, and he says there's only two forms of art. I forgot what he says. What the other one is? He said there's only two forms of art. I forgot what one of them is, but the other one is children's books. He's like, there's only two true forms of art. One is something, I can't remember what it was, and the other one is children's books, which that does, it takes a very special writer to communicate to that, to a kid.
Yeah.
But you remember books as a kid that you read that were, like Narnia to me was like, that was a real place, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so it's like, there's certain people that can write like that. I cannot, but. I don't know. Do you do writing? Have you ever thought about writing like sci-fi or?
Of course. I mean, I've thought about writing. I would be a fiction writer for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm so out of practice that it's so far from my mind. I don't even have any like ideas for stories or anything like that. I just enjoy.
If I had to ask you on the spot, what is your favorite sci-fi franchise?
Favorite sci-fi franchise. It changes with like what my life situation is. I mean, right now, since it's fresh, Battlestar Galactica, but it's going to be one of my favorites.
It's so good. And if you haven't watched it, pick it up. It's on Netflix. The whole series is on there. And it is not a fun show by any means.
It'll crush your soul.
If you want fun, watch the 1980 original, like the original 70s show, which I loved when I was a kid. But it's such a downer. A lot of times it's just a real downer, but it's very well done and very good.
Season 3 will ruin your life.
My wife isn't there yet, so she's... Yeah, season 3, man.
It ruined me.
It's a good one. So we're getting close to the end, but this is just a little nice little topic about stuff that we... Sci-fi is one of those things that we feel like I know that I it has such a bad connotation because Sci-Fi Channel now puts out really bad movies like Sharknado.
It does have a really bad connotation. People think that it's just like, oh, pew pew lasers and space aliens and things like that. I'm like, no, it's so much more if you get into the good stuff. And I think that's, for me, it was like more fantasy that brought me into the sci-fi world.
And you know, there's different types. There's what's called hard science fiction, like Arthur C. Clarke wrote hard science fiction where it's stuff that's based in actual science. And he wrote, and then you have, you know, lighter sci-fi, where you have, you know, stories like, you know, we were talking about like guys like, you know, Robert Heinlein and things like that, that are writing, you know, who wrote Starship Troopers, or Ray Bradbury, who are writing something it's not necessarily rooted in hard, you know, in hard, you know, you can't look it up as fact, but you know, like it's not going to tell you how a rocket really works, but a story's going to take place. You know, these guys are trying to get to Mars or Venus or I love Ray Bradbury's short stories, you know, Ray Bradbury wrote a lot of great fantasy, or if you read Something Wicked That This Way Comes, or Martian Chronicles. Those are all really great sci-fi books. So Jules Verne, I mean, there's so much sci-fi.
We get to talk about Jules Verne.
H.G. Wells. Those are the original geeks right there. Yeah. And, you know.
Old school.
Old school. You know, you have stuff, you know. I love old science fiction movies, that stuff. I just like to see what they got right, got wrong.
That's always fun. You're like, oh, you thought we'd have flying cars by now. That's adorable.
That's adorable.
And I think another thing that's really funny looking at old science fiction is that everything is so optimistic and hopeful. Like, science is going to be so, you know, so advanced, and diseases are going to be cured. But then now all the sci-fi that's being made is all like zombie apocalypse. Yeah. It's all dystopian.
It's all dystopian.
It's all,
we're screwed.
The world's going to be in ruins. And it just, it speaks so loudly of how the world, like how society thinks, you know? And that's another reason why I like science fiction, because it so much reflects the mental status of the world.
There's a really neat book called The Monster Show, and it doesn't go into sci-fi so much, but it goes into horror. And I lent it to my friend Lauren, but I'll be happy to lend it to you. It talks about how in each era, like, you know, since the advent of film, each era, like the horror movies in each era kind of reflect what's going on in society at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because, like, you know, you have the, like, you know, the giant monster movies of the 50s, obviously, where that was like, oh my God, radiation. You're like, we've unleashed this radiation. Like, mm-hmm. Or, you know, like the 60s, you had more like realistic, like Rosemary's Baby, where it was all these like weird kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, things that were coming out of like, you know, the hippie and the drug, like the counterculture, like,
yeah.
In the 70s, you had things like The Exorcist and, you know, and all these other things that like everything that's going on in the world and how it reflects like what's going on. So, mm-hmm. But sci-fi is the same way where it kind of can reflect what's going on in society at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, don't be afraid to embrace it. It seems nerdy, but I mean, I'm sure that there's some science fiction that people don't like. Lost was so good because I know the ending bummed a lot of people out, but it was like, ha ha, suckers! You've been watching a sci-fi show for the last 6 years,
and
people were getting into it, and people there was time travel, and people were just like, what's going on?
I never watched it.
But by the time they got to like all of that stuff, it was 3 years in, and people were so into the characters by then that it was like, well,
you had to go with it.
Sorry, suckers. Lost, you know. I don't know where I stand on Lost. I think it's worth watching. It's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, I think it's one of the shows that we're kind of living in now that we're living in the shadow of where it kind of made TV much more cinematic than it had been.
That is true. Yeah.
Where TV looks a lot more like movies now than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to give it the thing was that Abrams, there's a joke about Abrams that he doesn't know how to finish something. He knows how to start something, doesn't quite know how to finish it. And I kind of felt that way with Super 8. I kind of felt that way with Cloverfield. I love Cloverfield, but I just kind of felt like, he definitely starts something huge in Lost and doesn't quite know how to wrap it up.
Yeah, I feel like that's why I had a hard time getting, because I wasn't interested until it was kind of near the end of it and everyone was so frustrated with it that I'm like, you know, it's not worth it. It's kind of like Heroes, how it starts off really, really strong, like a great series, and then just
dies at the end.
Slowly dies. And kind of like, it makes me sad.
Yeah, there's a lot like,
I feel like Lost would be the same way. You know?
It's worth watching. You know what? Watch the pilot. I would definitely say
I've seen the pilot, actually.
Okay, all right.
I've seen a few episodes here and there, and I was like, oh, this is really cool, but I wasn't able to, like...
You want to know something awesome? I just saw the Hobbit, the second part of The Hobbit.
Nice.
Did not realize that was Evangeline Lilly. I kept going...
Really?
Why does Steven Tyler's daughter look so weird? What did she do? She's not even playing playing the same character. What's going on?
That's funny.
I'm the old man now. That's me.
Uh-huh.
I'm the old man in the theater shooting people for texting. That's going to be me now.
Florida man.
Stand your ground and shoot somebody for not.
We've all been there. Maybe not as far as him, but you know.
I will tell you a real quick story before we sign off. When I went to see Saving Private Ryan in the theaters, which obviously, you know, very traumatic experience.
Yep.
I was at a theater full of like little gangbangers, and there was an old man next to me. And this is back in the early days of like the flip phone. This kid would not stop like on his flip. This is back like, you know, 1999, right? Mm-hmm. So he had like, and this old, it's like he gets on like. Somebody, obviously the phone rings. This is like in the D-Day scene, right? And this kid's like, I'll call you back. I'm at the movies. This old man's like, hey. And then he just gets up, leans over, grabs the kid's phone, flips it closed, and puts it in his pocket. And he's like, you get it back when the movie's done.
Oh,
boom.
Snap. That's awesome.
And the awesome thing was, instead of like turning on the old man, all his friends were like, ah! All the little kids' friends were like,
good
boom.
Friends.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Julie.
Yes.
Embrace sci-fi.
I have.
Tell the listeners.
I think everyone should embrace it. It is not just aliens and spaceships and things that you can't connect with. There's a lot that you can actually connect with in sci-fi because they always touch on the real world. It's not completely out there. If you're not watching sci-fi channels, you know, see movies of ice spiders and sharknadoes and things like that. That's a whole different category. Don't be afraid. It's a lovely world to be
in. Is there a good sci-fi show that's on right now?
A good sci-fi show on right now.
Aside from Doctor Who, obviously.
I was like, well, Doctor Who, obviously. Anyone, I feel like everyone needs to watch it.
By the way, the new season drops in August, in case you want to jump on board
I can't wait that long. I can't think of any.
Are there any good? Yeah. Is there any? Ready Player One was a great recommendation. Do you have any?
Yes.
Do you have any another book you want to throw out there for anybody that wants to?
I haven't been reading lately, so I can't really, in good faith. Oh my God, I can't think of the name of it. There was one. Never mind. Moving on.
Get out to your local theater and go check out Star Tours.
Star Tours.
Get out to your local Disneyland and go check out Star Tours. That's a good place. If you want to start your sci-fi journey, I recommend starting it with Star Tours. And if you like that, crack a book open.
Just watch Star Wars.
Yeah, or watch Star Wars. Or read a goddamn comic book. There's a lot of great science fiction video games. Mass Effect is a really great story. Mm-hmm. There's so much I'm trying to recommend right now at the end that for people that maybe don't. I mean, anybody that's listening to this obviously is going to like sci-fi.
Yeah.
But we just kind of wanted to give it like our little love letter, our ode to sci-fi.
Yep.
So for Ray Harryhausen, Ray Bradbury, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, Philip K. Dick, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg. I know I'm missing millions and millions and millions.
Yep.
Like so many people, but...
all of them.
For everybody who's ever done sci-fi, Rod Serling, Twilight Zone. There were so many great Twilight Zone episodes that were sci-fi. It's all out there, and just embrace it, guys. There's so much good stuff out there and the good stories.
Don't be afraid.
Battlestar Galactica, watch Firefly, watch Doctor Who.
Dollhouse.
I've never watched Dollhouse.
Oh, my God.
Is it good?
Yeah.
All right.
this is my last recommendation.
Okay, guys. We're going to wrap it up, so we will say go sci-fi.
Yeah.
Embrace it, and we will be back with another fabulous episode very, very soon. Sorry we missed an episode this week, but we had to reschedule Julie, so instead of bringing somebody else in, we just decided to push it back a week. So we should be back on our regular schedule as of following this episode. So for now, for Julie Kang, the Conqueror, my new unofficial co-host, I will say that this transmission ends now.